Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by Craghoppers, one of the UK's favourite outdoor gear experts. Craghoppers and the National Trust have joined forces to create a collection inspired by nature and designed for life. Sales from the range help to support the National Trust's vital work, restoring some of our incredible natural landscapes, from delicate wetlands to boggy peatlands. Together, we are working to look after nature and care for our landscapes for generations to come. Hello and welcome to Nature Fix with me, Claire Hickenbotham. Every month we take you with us as we meet the people who spend their time outside and join them in a place that most inspires them. Today we've come back to London to meet someone whose name is synonymous with walking and enjoying the great outdoors. But following a cancer diagnosis in 2021, TV presenter Julia Bradbury stepped it up a level in researching the reasons why being outside is so good for you, and is now the author of two books on the subject, Walk Yourself Happy and Hack Yourself Healthy. I have arrived in London, well, Surrey really, to meet somebody who is described as a broadcaster, author, cancer thriver, and a heartfelt champion of the natural world and spending time in it. It's Julia Bradbury, and I'm meeting her at Ham House on the banks of the Thames. And while there are formal gardens here, we are going to seek out some of the wilder spaces to find out just why it's so good for you to spend time in nature.
Hi Claire, how are you? Nice to see you.
I'm a hugger.
We're Greek, you see, my family, so we hug a lot. And if we see some trees, can we hug those as well, please?
Oh, God.
Well, we are going to see some trees, so forgive me if I peel away.
Do it. So we are at Ham House.
Yes, beautiful.
A beautiful part of London. Have you been here before?
It's a familiar part of London to me, and it's very special. It's incredible to have all this big green open space in London. But this is new, and I'm really looking forward to bringing everybody here.
I know.
Because it's stunning.
So Ham House is behind us. Behind that, by 100 yards, is the Thames.
Yeah.
So there's lots of accessible space there. But you live in London.
Mm-hmm.
How easy is it to find green space?
It's incredibly easy, actually. I feel very blessed. And a lot of people are surprised that I live in London because they think I'd live in the countryside. And I do enjoy it, because I can get the access to the green spaces when I am here. So I might be home for a couple of weeks. Holland Park is very walkable from our house. Hyde Park's very walkable from our house. There are lots of what I would call secret little green spaces, some allotment-y kind of things, secret gardens that people are looking after. I'm very close to canals as well. Every day I'm out walking. I'm walking the dog, Zeus, who's a fairly recent addition to the family. I never needed an excuse to walk, but he needs to be walked now two or three times a day. For those moments when you're thinking, oh, I'll just sit a little bit longer at the laptop. You go, no, no, he's there wagging his tail. It's like, okay, it's time.
And you can't explain to them, can you?
No, you can't say, look, I've got to finish this. I need to finish this email. I've got a deadline.
Should we head up this avenue?
Yeah, let's do that.
So the formal gardens are kind of the other side, and this part of Ham is called the wilderness. Is this the sort of place that you would be drawn to over a formal garden?
I like anywhere green. For me, it's not the formal garden or the wild garden or the trees are definitely a pull for me. Hello. Parakeets.
Oh, they are
they
parakeets.
They're parakeets. So, of course, we've got an infestation of parakeets in London. And they're very noisy. And we've got parakeets in our garden. So I recognise that screech when I'm doing my morning breath work, which I do every morning, sitting out on a windowsill. Often I hear the screech of the parakeets.
Well, we've got a squirrel in front of us. So we are very much in nature.
We are. Look, there's another one.
I do love them, although you're not supposed to, are you?
No, you're not supposed to, because they are a menace, aren't they? They're little pests, unfortunately. And I remember doing many a story about the squirrels and how they were brought over by the Victorians for countryfile and how the greys have outrun the gorgeous reds. And yeah, it's such a shame.
It is. You mentioned countryfile. Let's backtrack a bit on your TV career, because you started as a showbiz correspondent.
Yeah.
And then countryfile came along. And then you have done, I think, pretty much every walking programme. So was it a conscious decision to move in that direction, or did it just happen?
So it's interesting, you know, you said, oh, then Countryfile came along. I don't think anything in television just comes along. I think, you know, there's a combination of factors that are at play that lead you on a career path. And as you said, I started out in the entertainment world. I knew, even when I was doing it, I loved it and enjoyed it. I was based in Hollywood. It was really, you know, when you're in your 20s and your job is to chase George Clooney and Arnold Schwarzenegger around red carpets, that's a pretty cool job.
Very nice.
Yeah. But I also recognised that I didn't think there was longevity in that. So when I came back to the UK, I ended up, after lots of different things, I launched Channel 5. And several years after that, I found myself having a meeting with the editor of Watchdog on BBC One. And he'd seen another programme that I'd done, which was a conversation show, a problem show almost. And he recognised something in me that he thought would make me a good consumer front for Watchdog. And he really, his name was Doug Carnegie, and he really trained me up and taught me so much. And I had 5 fantastic years presenting Watchdog with Nikki Campbell. And during that time, I noticed some very interesting programmes appearing on BBC Four. And that led to a meeting with a commissioner at BBC Four, and that led to a discussion about walking and Alfred Wainwright, and that led to the first Alfred Wainwright, the Wainwright Walks series. So that really was my, pardon the pun, first step into the outdoor walking world. And what I loved about it was this juxtaposition of, on BBC One, I was presenting Watchdog, and then I was doing this very different programme, the first of its kind. It was quite unusual for a woman to be in that space. And what I was amazed about is that once the first Wainwright's episode went out, bearing in mind I'd had a reasonable career up to this stage, and Watchdog was watched by sort of between 3 and 6 million people very regularly. I'd presented the National Lottery, I'd been on Top Gear. So, you know, I had like a mini fan base and stuff. But what was interesting about Wainwright's is as soon as that first programme dropped, it was instant. There was such a massive warm response to them. People were interested that I was following in his footsteps for a start. They were like, it's nice to see a woman doing this and having a fresh pair of eyes on Alfred Wainwright's view of the world. And then it was like, what boots are you wearing? And, you know, where did you get that coat and that hat? And a lot of people saying, thank you, you've brought back some incredible memories for me about the gorgeous Lake District. Or, thank you, you've inspired me, I'm going to go and do that walk, I'm going to do the coast to coast, I'm going to do Blencathra, I'm going to go and explore Castle Crag. And that didn't stop. That correspondence didn't stop. It was emails back then, it wasn't social media, it wasn't what it is now. So it was interesting and it was lovely, and it led to another series and another series and another series. And so that was the career change. That was really the moment, I think, that became the focus for the future. And soon after, it's probably 4 or 5 series after that, I had a call and I had a conversation with the great and the good at the BBC about Countryfile. And they wanted Matt Baker and I to take on Countryfile and move it into that Sunday night slot. And really it was cementing a love of the outdoors, because I have been a walker since I was a little girl. My dad, Michael, grew up in the Peak District. I went to school in Sheffield, and we would spend weekends, and sometimes Friday night after school, he'd take me up to the peaks, and that's what we'd do. We'd go exploring together. And he was a really wonderful tour guide. He was a good tour leader and told wonderful stories and is very knowledgeable about history and nature. So he made it very, very interesting. And I think that, combined with spending a lot of time in Rutland with my mum gardening, I think those two things, very different experiences of the outdoors, but from a very, very early age, I think they just seeded this love of nature into my DNA.
Can you pinpoint a time when you just realised that it made you happy, it made you feel better?
I don't think there is one moment. I think because it was such a rich part of my childhood and was always there, it was the constant. It's like very many things that are constant in your life, you take them for granted. They're there. You know that you can always go to them. So you don't necessarily recognise a moment or a particular thing. There have been times in my life where I have, but that came much later in adult life. I had a breast cancer diagnosis in 2021, which obviously rocked my world and my family's, and I was very shaken by it. But what I remember very clearly is coming back from my mastectomy after my diagnosis. So my treatment was a left side mastectomy, and I came home to my garden in West London, and I sat down at my I've got a favourite garden table. It's a beautiful wooden outdoor table, and I felt the grain of the wood underneath my fingertips, and I looked up. It was an October day, and it was blue skies, bright sun, and I just said to myself, I'm going to be outside every single day of my life from now on. Every single day. And some people say, but surely you've been outside every day anyway, because you're the walker, you know, you're country folios. But actually, no, you know, you can very easily, when you work at home, you can sit there at the laptop, you can writing, you know, calls, developing program ideas, whatever it might be. Or even if you get on a train and go somewhere and then get straight into another building, you can very easily not spend time outside. And I think that for me, that has been the most life-changing thing at this moment in my life, because there was a tree that I spoke to every day during my diagnosis, a London plane tree that's outside the window that I mentioned earlier, the bathroom window. And I say good morning to that tree every single day. And even when it's raining, I mean, I'd say to people, it doesn't matter about the weather. I make myself engage in what I call nature snacks.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, I mean, I do as well. I love it. I mean, you've heard it with exercise snacks.
Yeah, yeah.
But nature snacks, I think, are so important to all of us. And nature snacks are things that we can build into our lives. We don't spend enough time outside. We spend a lot of time inside. Now, you mentioned some of the research and the science and everything that I've really done deep dives into. Being inside isn't very good for us. You know, there are lots of, they're called VOGs, volatile organic compounds, that are, you know, going up into our nose, we're breathing into our lungs, our sofas are covered in fire retardants, our carpets use pretty horrible glue underneath them. The indoor environment is not a healthy one, so trying to get outside as often as possible is fundamental to human health, and that's what I've learned with all of the research and the experts and the doctors that I've spoken to. So if there's one thing that I could say to people who are feeling fatigued and tired and not well and feeling a sense of malaise, it's get outside as often as you can. And I get lots of people who interact with me on Instagram, and I had one lady who said, oh, I get really bad headaches and I've been taking headache pills and all the rest. I said, can I just suggest that next time you get a headache, stand up, go outside, and if you can't get outside, just stick your head out of a window. And she wrote back to me and she said, I've been doing it ever since you said that. And she said, my headaches have gone. She said, it works.
Yeah.
Because she's probably in a hot room, she's got, you know, no fresh air, not drinking enough perhaps, sedentary, so blood not circulating. Just that combination, that can give you a headache. That can give you really serious headaches. So there's a lot that we can all take from nature.
In your first book, Walk Yourself Happy,
yeah,
you talk about sticking your head out of the window.
Yes.
And in your second book, you talk about having 120 minutes in nature.
You can build these little nature snacks into your life. And the 120 minutes, by the way, that was research that came out of the University of Exeter. It was a paper that was led by Professor Matthew White, and it went global, that news. And it's 120 minutes a week. So it's not you've got to go out for a 2-hour hike, it's across the week, so it's 20 minutes a day. That is sort of the benchmark to be as socially and psychologically and as mentally happy, and it really helps with all of those markers. It really helps human health on that level. And you know, I think the fact that it's not consecutive, I think that makes it eminently doable for all of us.
Well, I've got a 14-year-old son who I don't walk to school anymore, but there's a lot of people who do the school run, and you probably wouldn't count it as being outside, but it absolutely is part of that 120 minutes, isn't it?
I think the school walk, for me, with my children, it's so important for all of us. It's very important for them. 10 minutes, brisk walking, and we go the longer route. We live in central London, it's polluted. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, you have to, I say stick your head out the window. If you're sticking your head out the window and, you know, you're over a railway track or, you know, or a bus lane, obviously that's not great. So you need to find a little bit of green somewhere, a little bit of clean air. But for my kids, that fresh air, that motion, that movement, it's a really positive, good way for them to start the day. And we go the longer route so that I know we're going to take in nature. I know there's a beautiful tree-lined street, there's a little green bit, you know, a little parky bit that we pass. And that counts. And I know that that counts because for my book, Hack Self Healthy, I wanted to speak to Professor Matthew White and ask him if we could do an experiment for Hackstaff Healthy. So I made contact with the university and we did an experiment together. We all went to Cornwall. My sister Gina came and they had set, Gina and I, some tests. So we were sitting down at a laptop and they were showing us things on a screen and we had to respond. And it lasted for about 20 minutes. It was really hard, not as in academically hard, but you know, you had to concentrate. So we did this test and then my instruction was to go outside on a coastal walk, take in everything around me and come back, and then we'd reset the test and we'd see how Gina and I did again when we were next to each other. And I did that, came back, opened up the sliding doors, and it was quite fusty and dusty in there, and Gina had been drinking coffee and carrying on with her emails. So we sat down, we did it again, and guess what? I was faster and I was more accurate and I felt happier. And I use that now when I'm going around, if I'm giving talks and I'm going into corporations and talking about the benefits of nature and health. I use that as a prime example of, if you want a happy, productive workforce, this is what you should be encouraging them to do.
I am looking for a tree for
okay.
us.
Okay, oh, there's a big tree.
It's a very big tree. I don't know whether we're going to be able to hug it completely.
No, but it doesn't matter, actually. Our big girth is good.
So this has got quite rough bark, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's all right.
So what are we doing?
So what we're doing is we're grounding. And grounding is really good for you. So grounding is said to reduce inflammation, helps with blood as well, and also just generally makes you feel better. I always say to people, if you are feeling really tired and exhausted, if it's a lovely day, one of the best things you can do, I mean, even if it's not a lovely day, but if it's a lovely day, you can take off more clothes, go outside and lie in the grass. Put your bare feet in the grass and have a little...
It's about touching.
It's about touching, but it's also about connecting to Earth's energy, and we're sort of plugging in, earthing ourselves.
Okay, so you have got your whole body leaned against
the tree. I've got my whole body. I'm full on hug.
And the face?
And the face, yeah.
And how long would you spend like this?
Oh, I mean, you could just do a couple of minutes with a lovely tree like this.
I feel quite calm.
It is, it's really calming. And have a little sniff as well. Sniff of the bark. Something else about us being outside and children being outside as well is, when we do spend more time outside and we get mud on our hands or soil, or we sniff in a bark like this, we're inhaling microbes from this outdoor space and from this tree, and they go into our lungs, and that's really good for our immunity as well.
It's lovely.
I've got a lot of my followers are tree huggers, and they send me lots of pictures of them hugging trees, and they send me lots of pictures of where they've got the whole family to hug the tree as well.
To get everybody
around. Yeah, to get everybody
around.
It's a very nice thing.
There's some social connection there as well, which
yeah.
is a big thing for you as well, isn't it?
Well, social connection is a big thing for me, and it's a big thing for all of us. Again, it's one of those really easy hacks that is very underestimated. People die of loneliness, and people tend to suffer from more illnesses when they're living alone. And we know as well, there are a couple of studies that show people in hospital who have more visitors recover faster and leave faster. Because that social connection, it's so important. And it doesn't have to be, obviously, I mean, I'm very blessed. I have a wonderful family and we're very close. And I have that interconnection every day, but not everybody does. Partners may have passed away. You might be at the later stage in life. So then the connections that become important are your friendships. And also they're called weak connections, weak ties. So those little outings to the shop, to, you know, maybe you go and have a cup of tea or a coffee, and that little, morning, how are you, Claire? Are you okay today? Nice to see you. Oh, I like your shoes, that's nice. That's enough to change your day.
Because that's not gonna happen if you stay inside.
No, it's not.
You've talked about kind of the health benefits there, and there was a study in your Hack Yourself Healthy book that I think I've come across before, actually, about patients in hospital and the view they had while they were recovering, whether it was a brick wall or a green view, impacted on their recovery.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, that's similar to the studies that have been done that show if you're visited more and you have more visitors, you'll leave sooner. I think it was a study that was done in the 80s. It's cited quite often, and it was a hospital in the States. And those patients that did have the nature view, so a window, and apparently it even works with a picture of nature as well, those patients had less pain medication and recovered faster.
We are nearly back to where we started.
Yeah.
But there was one last thing I wanted to ask you about. You brought your sister Gina with you today, who you've talked about. She came to Cornwall and did the experiment with you.
Yeah.
Gina runs a website called The Outdoor Guide, which has got all sorts of useful information on there. And Pit Stops, I think that was one of my favourites. I think this place is on there.
Is it?
Yes, oh, as well as a pit stop. But you have a foundation as part of it.
Yeah, so The Outdoor Guide really was born out of the response to that first Wainwright series that I told you. There were so many questions coming in about what do you wear and where do you walk and which walk do you recommend in Norfolk and which walk do you remember. I just couldn't and still can't respond to them all. So we started logging them all, and now they're up on the website, and I think we've got 700 or 800 free, it's all free, access is all free, downloadable walks and the pit stops and dog friendly pubs, for example, or, you know, little hotels that you might want to stay at. So it's a free bit of outdoor inspiration is how we like to call it. But the foundation stems really from mine and from Gina's passion that children really need access to the outdoors, and they need it from an early age consistently. And sometimes they don't get it at home, so sometimes that falls on the school. And one of the big barriers to children getting outside is they don't have an outdoor coat. They haven't got a basic outdoor coat and a pair of wellies. And in some instances, the parents might phone up the school and say, Julia can't go outside today because she doesn't have an outdoor coat and we've only got one uniform and I don't want it to get wet because we haven't got any replacements. What the foundation does is we've created something called Waterproofs and Wellies. It's a set of waterproofs and wellies and waterproof trousers. In state primary schools, there are thousands of children across the UK who don't have access to these. So people can say, I'm going to supply 20 to my local school. It could be a company or a business or an individual. And so far, we have raised over £250,000.
Wow.
For the cause. And it all stemmed from a stat that I read several years ago now, saying that children today, well, we know that children spend less time outside than ever before. And one of the stats that came out a few years ago is that children spend less time outside than prison inmates. And we know, you know, prison inmates get their hour.
That's heartbreaking, isn't it?
So the foundation is there to try and combat that, as well as helping the children one-on-one. It's also getting the message out there. It's important, you know, outdoor time is important. And if the school is going to be the provider, let's enable them to do that.
It's about getting the children, isn't it? And getting them at that age so that then it becomes a lifetime of needing it and wanting to go outside.
I think for me, there were times in my life when I didn't spend as much time outside as I should have, but I always came back to it. And I came back to it after my health scare, and there were other times before that as well. And I often say that for me, the great outdoors is my therapist, it's my outdoor gym, and it's my best friend.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Nature Fix. If you liked it, why not give us a rating or review? We'll be back next month as we head outside again for another fix of nature. But if you can't wait that long, why not check out our other nature series, Wild Tales, with Rosie Holdsworth and Ajay Tagala. I'll see you next time. Bye for now. Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by outdoor gear experts, Craghoppers. Heading out for adventure? Discover Craghoppers' National Trust range of clothing and accessories. Inspired by nature and designed to last, each item in the collection comes with a guarantee for life. And with every purchase, you're helping to support the Trust's vital work restoring our natural landscapes. Get ready for your journey outdoors at craghoppers.com/national-trust.